I'm happy to tell you in detail the pube story if you would like it.
Yeah, I think we all want to hear that.
Listening to the latest episode of the Bagley Talks to an Important Person podcast, featuring one of advertising's most decorated creatives, Jessica Schriftman, will blow your mind. So it is critical to your long-term brain health that you do not listen to this episode. Jessica has worked at Droga5, BBH, Wyden Plus Kennedy. Her work includes OkCupid's DTF campaign, Delta's Dating Wall, Google Chrome's Emmy-nominated Just Time, and a New York cannabis store called The Travel Agency, which is most likely a money laundering operation. In this episode, you will learn exactly how Jessica took a throwaway phrase a client mumbled in a briefing and turned it into one of the most talked about campaigns of the decade. Her specific method for subverting a cultural behavior to make a brand feel dangerous and alive. How she sells genuinely terrifying ideas to clients. Pomodoro brainstorming technique Jessica uses to generate an irresponsible number of ideas without burning out. Again, I cannot stress enough that having your mind blown is a very serious medical emergency, so you should steer clear of this podcast.
Well, it's your lucky day, you headphone-wearing bastard, because Jason Bagley's podcast is here. Oh, yeah, he's gonna interview the most important person, so shut your mouth and f***ing open your ears. Yes, it's Jason's podcast, the best you can get anywhere. And if you pay a f***ing attention, you'll get your f***ing mind blown. But I should probably tone it down, because Jason Bagley wouldn't want me to swear. Yes, it's Jason Bagley's podcast, baby. You better get out your notebook and your pen. He'll interview a motherf***ing important f***ing person. God damn it, I did it again. It's Jason's podcast, here we go.
Jessica Schriftman, welcome to the Bagley Talks to an Important Person podcast. Thank you for finally, thank you for being patient. I know we've been trying to set this up for a while, so I'm excited to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
How do you feel right now? How excited are you? How pumped are you right now?
I'm excited. It's Friday, and I actually got married last weekend.
Whoa.
So yeah, riding that cloud nine right now.
Congratulations.
Thank
you. So this is like the honeymoon, this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
That's perfect. Well, congrats. That's awesome. First off, I was looking at your list of accolades and accomplishments and awards. And just, I hate to start this off from a critical place, but it's too long. There's too many awards, and if your awards and accolades was a book, I would not read it because it's too long. So just constructive criticism, maybe win less awards because it's an unmanageable list. So
I think there's more awards in your background.
I don't think so. And I have not made a list because it's too, like, it's just too much to, I can't read a lot at one time. So just take that under advisement and consider winning less awards in the future.
Thank you. That's some good feedback.
And one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this, on the podcast is because I don't know if I told you this, but when I was ECD at Wyden Kennedy, Portland, we had like the leadership team sat kind of in this hallway and we had a wall off to my right. And I decided that this wall was going to be where I would post work that inspired me from an art direction and design standpoint specifically, not just any work, but like art direction and design. Perhaps ironic that I'm a copywriter and that I wanted to do that, but I just wanted to keep like elevating the design and art direction of the office. And the very first thing I put on there at the very top of the wall was the OkCupid campaign that you worked on. So I was just a huge fan of that. Still pretty obsessed with that campaign. That's kind of how I originally knew your name. And I was like, okay, anyone involved in this campaign is awesome and I need to talk to them. Mm-hmm. And of course,
thank you so much.
A ton of other amazing stuff as well. And went on to, you know, Billy and all that stuff. So I want to get into that and I want to get into like the backstory of the OKCupid campaign and how you did that. But before we get to that, let's start out with two truths and a lie.
All right. The first one is I worked with Robert Yeoman, Wes Anderson's DP, on a Bud Light commercial. The second one is my coworker shaved her pubes in the bathroom for a Harry Razor close-up shot. And the third is I got stuck in the elevator at Wyden for 3.5 hours.
Oh, God. Those all sound very much like they could be true. I'm going to guess that I'm pretty sure that you did shoot with Wes Anderson's DP. So I'm going to say that's a truth. You were the creative director at Billy. So the pube thing sounds super like a totally normal thing that would happen at work. If you work at Billy. So I'm going to say the lie is getting stuck in the elevator for 3 hours.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Yes.
Good That's job. Amazing.
Do you got any more? Is that it?
That's kind of it, yeah. But I'm happy to tell you in detail the pube story if you would like it.
Yeah, I think we all want to hear that.
All right. So when you're shooting a commercial for Razor, you always have to show that money shot with the hair and the blade, or at least at Billy, that's what we did because we were hair positive. And we remember our prop stylist was kind of like, someone had shaved and our prop stylist was like, hey, how does this hair look? And I'm going to refer to her as A just to not kind of out her. But A, who was kind of on the account side, she was like, oh, no. Give me that. Give me that. And then proceeds to go in the bathroom and then like comes out and is like, here you go. And we're like, for sure. She just shaved her pubes and handed them fresh the prop stylist. But like, that's the thing when you were, it was like startup culture. Like you're just like, I will do anything to like help this brand out. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, apparently that's how you build a brand from scratch and sell it for millions and millions of dollars. You got to go in the bathroom and shave your own pubes. Was this like a mostly female production, or were these pubes being handed to like a male prop stylist? Not that it would have mattered, but.
Right. No, that's a good question. Actually, yeah, it was generally speaking, we tried to hire all female identifying kind of folks to help with the shoot.
In case you have to shave some pubes and hand them off.
That would have been fun though. Actually, that would have been a good handoff.
That's crazy. Also, according to my research, I mean, you'll have to verify if this is true, but according to my research, before you got into advertising, you had a long-term romantic relationship with Donald Rumsfeld. Is that correct?
That would fall into the lie camp.
That would be amazing if it was true, though. Okay. So that's pretty amazing that those being stuck in the elevator is the least crazy of the three. And it's the false statement. All right. So, Jessica, let's get into, I would love to hear about, let's start with the OKCupid campaign that you were involved with. What's the backstory? Like, how did you get to that? Like, take us on the journey that concluded with one of my favorite campaigns.
Aw, thank you. Very kind. Sure. Okay, let's see. So I actually recall that the account people were like, oh, hey, just so you know, like the OKCupid client briefing is going to be in an hour. Like, do you guys have that on your calendars? And we're like, oh, no, we're not. But yeah, sure. Like, we'll join. And, you know, a lot of times the account people will try to like spare you from the clients of when they're kind of like sharing what they're going for. But I'm so glad that we attended that because one of our clients, her name's Melissa. She's awesome. And she's actually like the head of Match now. But I just remember being in the room with her, and she said, she started talking about the demographic a little bit. And she was like, you know, our girl is, she's into this, she's into that. And she's still DTF, but you know, she just like very like casually kind of said it. And then, so I just wrote that in my notebook. So I was like, DTF, you know, I was like, she just said that. Like that just kind of struck me. I was like, I don't know what to do with this yet, but like, let's see. Also around the same time, I will say like I was single, and so I was on the dating apps, and I was very much like able to kind of like pull from my own experience. And so I want to say even like 2 weeks prior, like I had gotten sent like a dick, unsolicited dick pic. So the temperature, like even with the account people, like it was very clear to us that like the enemy was hookup culture, and that was where it felt like a lot of the tension was. And OkCupid was very much like, hey, like we need to take like a really big swing here. And one thing that we noticed immediately was that their profiles had a lot more like rich information to it. So people really like answered a lot of questions like, you know, do you like, did you vote for Trump, or like, are you 420 friendly? And so there was just a lot more like depth. And that's something that we really wanted to bring forward. And so then, yeah, I brainstormed with my partner. He's fantastic. And yeah, just I was kind of asking myself the question that I like to ask often is like, how can I subvert this? And so got to subverting the F to really showcase the depth of the OkCupid.
So the DTF actually, like that came in the first conversation with the client, like you heard her say that just in passing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, there's, cause I naturally am drawn to provocation. So I was like, well, she said it first, you know? So it's like, I'm like, she seemed, maybe this might be, she open to this. So yeah. Okay. And I have the whole client presentation deck that I can also take you through, if you want.
So how did you get, I would love to see that, but how did you go from like that initial insight to how that creatively ended up expressing itself in the campaign?
Originally, I'm someone who I love typography so, so much. And I originally thought that this was going to be like a type-based campaign. But one of my secret weapons is someone who's in the art department. Her name's Deb Rosen. And I always talk to her about how to kind of craft things and whatnot. And she said, oh, like, did you ever envision photography for this? And I'm like, no, you know, how are we going to do that kind of thing? And then she's like, oh, well, check out these photographers. They're called Toilet Paper. And they were just so bold, so colorful. And as soon as I started to kind of pair like the typography with it, yeah, it just felt like so standout. And it felt like this statement that was going to really make them pop. In the New York subway, they had told us that was like a media buy that they were interested in. Yeah, played around with like, you know, how the typography at first, like the type was going to be all like horizontal. And then I was kind of having a happy accident with the graphic designer where we're like, hey, what happens if you tilt it? And it was just like this magic moment. So yeah, just we always knew we wanted it to feel like really artful and colorful and not look like an ad, or especially not look like an OkCupid ad.
But how did you go from the acronym DTF to the creative concept of kind of playing with the letter, the meaning of that?
Oh yeah. So really just wanting to subvert like down to fuck. So it was like, okay, what other F could that be to showcase the depth of the OkCupid user? So kind of showed my partner like a running list of just my first like thought starters, you know, down to farmer's market, like just had one example. And then he was like, what if it's this? What if it's that? So we just kind of had this like running list. At the time, like we were being treated as like the CDs on it, even though it was kind of unofficial, but we still had to check in with the ECDs. And I think, I don't even remember if they like knew what DTF was, but they just knew, they understood that it was going to be good, which was a good like leap of faith, I think.
And was it part of the brief to kind of expand OkCupid? Like, were they known as the DTF dating platform and they were wanting to kind of expand outside of that, beyond just being that?
No. So actually they came to us kind of not knowing where they should strategically stand. So they knew, like, hey, Tinder, it stands for like hookup culture and Match stands for marriage. So like, what do we stand for? And so, yeah, that was something that we knew there was tension in going up against the hookup culture. Cause like Aziz Ansari had just dropped his book, Modern Romance, and kind of talked about all the pitfalls of dating. And there was all these articles about like dating fatigue. So even just like in culture, it felt like that was what was like permeating. Okay. It's interesting for me when I look back at this PDF, because I'm not sure I would present like this to the client this way anymore. But I think at the time it was really good because we were just getting a flavor for them. And we didn't want them to get like wrapped up in their brand guidelines and whatnot. And you know, Wieden Kennedy makes really beautiful decks. And that was one of the ways that we were interested in impressing them. Yeah. In the beginning of the deck, it was really clear to us that we kind of needed to carve out like where OkCupid stood in comparison to, you know, the Tinders and Matches of the world. And we really wanted to kind of let them know like what we've been doing since we last met with them, you know? So it was like, hey, we read all these things like Modern Romance. We talked to people in the Target. We really set up like what the problems were with dating. So the fact that like people were basically swiping right just on like a single photo felt pretty crazy. Or even like a single blurry photo. The fact that people were like copying and pasting messages also felt like very, like the romance in dating was just completely gone. We showed them how we did our homework, you know, we read all the articles and how there's really fatigue. You know, there was this culture of like sending dick pics and like, hey, you ups kind of thing. And that profiles were really like lacking in information, like maybe just someone has 6'5" on their profile, but they don't say anything else about them. And that didn't really feel special. So we really wanted to set up that like dating needed a hero, that we wanted to bring the depth back into OkCupid. And so then like in true Wieden fashion, there was a manifesto, which I won't read. But it basically was kind of like, hey, remember when dating was more like this and now it's like this. And so, yeah, we really just wanted to take them on a journey to set up how dating needs saving. So there's quite a long dance that was happening even before we got to the work. And then we really said like, hey, we want to give you a mission. Like your mission is to save dating. And now like, here's how we're going to do it. So we actually showed them, I want to say 3 campaigns in the tissue session. And yeah, so this first one, if you come to page 27, like you can see, like that's a pencil sketch. I drew that thing. And yeah, we have this little write up for it and it's like, OkCupid is the dater doodle. People on here aren't just down to fuck. They're down to Fargo to figure out if the butler did it. They're down to feel out the dance floor. And then rather than show them any sort of out of home, we just had key visuals. So on the next page, it was like down to ferment some kimchi. That one didn't end up making it into the final, but it was like a fun one for this deck. Down to F6, down to Flight of the Conchords, down to Feast on Avocado Toast. Yeah. And then we also blew it out into different 15s and stuff. And also in this deck, we had an idea like find your Brian Gosling, and we had a couple other ones. So it was very, very loose in the first way that we showed it. And the client told me, Melissa, that like, I think she said she like texted underneath the desk. I don't totally remember the details now, where she was like texted. The person was like, oh, this DTF thing is really interesting. And I reminded her like, hey, you were the one who said that. And she didn't even realize she'd said it in the meeting. So that was the first presentation, as you saw, like super, super loose. Looking.
Was this the presentation where the CEO texted and the CMO and said chills?
Wait, did that? Yeah. Did you watch a video or something?
I did some homework.
Jessica. Yeah. Oh, wow. Look at you. Yeah, she did.
Yeah. I mean, you can clearly tell, like, even though this looks nothing like the final product and it got so much cooler, it's very easy to see, like, this is a big idea. Like, you can just see, like, okay, we could go forever on this. It's a huge idea.
Yeah, it felt, I think she could easily identify that it was provocative. And also someone, her background was in PR, so I think she just had a good gauge. And it just felt like a riskier big swing. So that's the first deck. And then about, you know, later on that week, they identified the ones that they liked and DTF rose to the top. And so that's when I kind of went away and crafted it a bit more. That's when I started looking at the photography and the art direction of how to bring it to life.
Is the second campaign where it becomes blue?
Yeah.
Find your Brian Gosling?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the third is lack of memory.
It was all about the questions. So they asked really interesting, now Hinge asks questions, but at the time Hinge didn't. So the whole campaign was about the information that you could get on OkCupid. So it was like, did you vote for Trump? Like, are you circumcised or uncircumcised? These would all be like out of home things. You know, do you believe in God, or who pays on the first date? Things like that. So there was three campaigns in the mix.
Yeah, cool. And so they pick the DTF. You go to the next presentation.
Yep. Well, I think they picked two, and so we kind of like fleshed those out. Do you say, by the way, you say flesh out, right? I feel like a lot of people also say flesh out, and
yes, they are. We are correct, and they are incorrect.
Okay. Goodness. Okay. All right, so then presentation number two did like a super condensed version here of kind of like giving them like the mini manifesto and the setup again, you know, y'all with us, we're on this mission to save dating. How does that feel to you? But on this one on page 10 was the first time we actually showed them kind of a brand tagline, which was dating deserves better. And so then we kind of, what I did at first was just kind of like, dip their toes. So on page 13, it was kind of like, hey, here's the photography that we had in mind. It's irreverent, it's colorful, and kind of really like showed this, the mood boards. And then on page 18, I was like, I really want to pair that with like bold typography that really stands out. And like, so that you see DTF really big. And then we kind of said, you know, now that you've seen the inspiration, like we need you to squint here, but like, these are the mock-ups, like prepare your retinas. I'm just always infusing humor into the deck. And so those are some like initial comps that, you know, the final product evolved, but they're pretty close to.
Yeah, they're pretty. This is what it kind of became for sure.
Yeah.
So by this point, in between those two periods, in between the first deck and the second deck, you had, you know, with the help of Deb Rosen, had discovered toilet paper. And kind of landed on, okay, this is sort of the photography style that we want to go with.
Yes. Yeah. And not knowing if we could get them, but knowing that there was other photographers who could also achieve a similar look, but
yeah,
knowing that they were our number one.
I think I have a very primitive brain. And when I first saw this campaign, just the bold, I love bold 3D fonts. I love like bright, crazy colors. And I think it just like completely lit up whatever monkey part of my brain was just like, I feel pleasure when I look at these.
Yeah, I mean, the color was very intentional. I think we wanted to just bring that fun back to dating, because like we said, there's like some fatigue and people were kind of dreading, you know, swiping on apps. And we were just like, oh, man, we just wanted to show like the fun and the personality of each person, and yeah, to make it really feel artful.
And how did the client respond? Obviously they bought it, but like, was there any pushback, or were they like, love it, this is great? I mean, I don't know how anyone could not like this, it's amazing. But
To be honest, no pushback. The only thing was just we had to make everything work in the budget. So the next steps. And if I'm being honest with you, I actually think our client even pushed us a little bit more. Like when we were on the shoot, like she was like, I really want to do something about like, let's filter out the far right. And then next thing I know, they have like a gun, like a fake gun on set. And they're like showing it down the toilet. And that was like an idea, just like she was like, could we try something like that? And it's like, wait, okay, we're cool with this if you're cool with this. So yeah, we thankfully did have a really great client. I think there were some markets that we were going to be in, like Portland and Austin, where she said, you know, can you make it a little more contextual? But overall, they were just super, super jazzed.
So where was their business at? Like, were they kind of struggling in terms of compared to the other dating platforms?
Yes. Yeah. They were kind of seen as like the dinosaur, and people were not on the platform. And yeah, after this campaign, there was like a 20 or 25% spike in users. Yeah.
I did not know that, but it was an easy guess, because when you said kind of how open they were to the idea, how easily they bought it, they didn't really push back. Usually that's a client or a brand that is in trouble.
That's what you're saying. Yeah.
It's a lot. It's typically way harder to sell really breakthrough crazy stuff to a client that's having a lot of success doing things the way they're doing them. Like, why, you know, don't mess with success.
Right.
But if you look back at, if I look back at Old Spice, if I look at KFC, if you even go like way back to when Crispin got Burger King and like totally revolutionized that brand, all of those were brands that were in serious trouble, where they kind of, things were so bad that they were like, well, we got to try something crazy, and what, it can't get worse. we can't make things much worse than it is. It's a great position. It's a great time to work with brands. If you know, they still got to be courageous and, you know, think outside the box and all that stuff. But it's a lot easier generally to work with that type of brand, unless you're working on a brand that is doing really well, and they're doing really well because they've been doing great work for a long time. So
fully agree with everything you just said. I think the only thing I now am remembering, the only thing they might've pushed back on, was I was showing their logo in like a much simpler way. Their logo had some sort of like busier, like outline and stuff. But apart from that, that's like all I could remember about the pushback.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's really fun to see. Well, let's shift gears into, like, I would love to just hear the Jessica Schriftman creative process, TM, Circle R, copyright, all rights reserved, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Like, what, how do you approach, you get a new project, like, what's your process? How do you start out? What do you do?
Yeah. Well, I guess I would say there's kind of what I'm always doing in the background before I get the assignment. And then there's what I do like when I get the assignment. So I'll start with the first. The first is that I'm just always like fueling up, I guess I would say, and kind of like squirreling away little nuts for the future. And so for me, like my type of creativity is like pulling from lived experiences, from observations, from things that I read, from music that I hear, movies, news stories and whatnot. And so that way it's kind of like I have like a little bit of like a temperature check on like where like society is, you know? And so like I'll start with kind of like the normie, like more mass news, like a Today Show thing. But then I'll kind of go into like, I have a Finsta where I just like follow like fashion or just pure stuff so the algorithm doesn't get mixed up with my friends. So then I'll kind of like deep dive in there. And so then I'll kind of be like, okay, I kind of feel like I'm caught up right now. But then what I do is like, I just try to become like an expert in that category, because oftentimes like a client like Roblox or, you know, a hair brand or something, and like they'll approach me and I'm like, hang on a second. Like, I do not know anything about your brand and I don't want to pretend to be an expert. So then I like really, really, really get in there and I like steep myself in the tea. So like for Roblox, I probably watched like hours upon hours of like gamer footage, and I watched like the Bloxy Awards, and I was watching TikTokers, and yeah, I like knew all like who the top YouTube Robloxers were and stuff. So I'm like, okay, cool. Now I feel like I can like approach this assignment now that I have like a general understanding. Or like with the hair care stuff, I'm like, sure, I wash my hair, but I don't know like what makes your product better or how people are feeling about your product and stuff. So like, I love looking at like the comment section of Instagram posts. Like for me, that is such a little like gold mine of insights and nuggets. And I've actually even like plucked like taglines from comments and stuff like that.
I think that reminds me, oh gosh, what was the Emerald Nuts tagline?
Right.
It's a great tagline, and apparently it was pulled straight from the comments of
Yes, good.
Yeah, yes, good.
And yeah. Like,
that was just pulled from comments, so that's great. Before you move on, I think it's interesting. And I think this kind of happens naturally when you're like digging in, you get a new brand, a new product, a new assignment, whatever. You don't know that much about it. So you're naturally kind of learning about it. I think it's really important in that process, before you become an expert, to write down all your thoughts and your questions and your initial impressions, because that outsider point of view, that non-expert point of view, is one of the values that we bring to clients.
Definitely.
It is, and it's kind of like, I always compare it to like immigrants. So much of the innovation that has happened in the United States and probably all countries happened from immigrants, because immigrants came in and they didn't have a preconceived notion. And they just looked at something that was just kind of the way it was. And everyone that had been around it just like, well, this is the way it was. We don't question it. And then an immigrant comes in and they're like, well, wait, why are you doing it this way? Why don't you do it this way? Because they see it fresh. And I think it's really important to kind of keep track of your initial impressions before you become super duper expert. Because then eventually, if you study something long enough, you're going to start to see it very similar to the way the client sees it. And in a way, you've lost a lot of your value when that happens. So you do have to learn the product and learn the brand. But there's so much of that, like ignorant first impressions are super valuable creatively.
If you're a CD, ACD, or senior creative ready to make the jump to CD, and you want to see exactly how I lead my teams to the kind of work we've been talking about in this episode and how I get clients to buy it, I made a free masterclass called The 7 CD Secrets. So if you want to get off the agency treadmill and onto a rocket with questionable safety protocols, hit the link in the show notes to watch my free 7 CD Secrets masterclass.
I think too, like when I'm doing my research, it's not just about like what the product is. It's more like what are like those like niche conversations that are happening around the product. Cause it's like, if all of a sudden you see like three connections, you're like, oh, maybe there is something like rich here, or there's something that we can kind of like subvert or like rub our thumb in.
Yeah. And you find like, if you can identify mass behaviors that are happening, then you can like subvert it or just like ride that wave. It's way easier to tap into something that's already happening than to try to create. It's nearly impossible to create mass behavior from a brand. It happens occasionally, like once a decade. You know, I'm thinking like the Budweiser What's Up campaign, like that. Like that created people, everyone mimicked that and copied it. But
yeah,
it's much more likely that you're going to be able to tap into something that's already happening and kind of leverage it.
Yes. Well said. Yeah. So then when I'm brainstorming, I really like to do this thing called the Pomodoro method. Do you know what that is?
Roughly. I do know it.
Yeah. It's literally just based on like that. You like it's a 25 minute timer. So like 25 minutes of working and then like 5 minutes of like free fucking around and then 25 minutes of working. Because for me, it's just like there's so much distraction around that like I need to be like, okay, I'm going to do like 2 Pomodoros of brainstorming or else, you know, you could just get sucked away. So yeah. That's a very nerdy part of my process.
So tell us briefly, like educate us on the Pomodoro method.
I think it's based on like the tomato that like the 25 minute timer, like the one that you actually turn. And so, yeah, it's just like a methodology for productivity.
So you work for 25 minutes and then you take, how long of a break do you take?
5 minutes.
5 minute break.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you can indulge in whatever for 5 minutes and then you kind of go back to it. So it's good for doing all sorts of things like your taxes and whatnot. Yeah. And then I'm kind of always just at that point, I'm like in inquisition. So just asking a lot of different questions, writing different questions. One of like the formulas for me too of, you know, I get down all those ideas and then if I kind of get stuck a little bit, a formula that I have created over the years is I have this little Google Doc where I've dropped in like campaigns that I absolutely adore. And then what I do is I'll write the question that I thought that they asked to get there. And then I like basically take that question and I apply it to my client or my assignment. And like every single time you come up with like a totally fresh new idea that doesn't look like the original idea. But it just helps me like, you know, get to different executions like a lot faster.
Yeah. I do the same thing. I have these 62 questions or thought starters that I've created over the years, and they pretty much all came from reverse engineering my favorite ad.
Oh yeah, there you go. I want to see your 62 questions. Is that the equity that I get in exchange for?
That's your payment for being on the show is you can have my.
I would really like that.
They've been renamed the Mega Machine questions and queries. The Mega Machine questions and queries.
Yeah, it's a good, it's a helpful method. After that, you know, you kind of park it for a little bit. And honestly, I take a lot of showers. I'm not going to lie. I have a lot of shower thoughts. This one project, I swear to God, I was taking like 4 showers a day just because I was like, oh, I had a good one in the shower. Let me see if I can emulate that.
You're like Tom Ford. Apparently he takes baths.
Okay. When he's conceiving of his fashion creative direction.
I guess that seems even more intense. Like you're going to like fill up a bathtub 4 times a day.
Yeah. I don't have patience for that. Okay. So then kind of like park them for a little bit if there's time and then kind of go through circle favorites. And then I really like bring in like a close confidant if I can. A lot of times these days I don't have a partner anymore. But on the occasions that I do, like for me, it's really important to like bring someone in that you have, I would say, like emotional safety with, so that you can kind of say your crappy ideas, you're just your raw thought starters. And hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And then oftentimes it's so great because they'll add to it or they'll say, oh, that made me think of this. And it kind of starts to give it a little bit more shape. Yeah, I think, does that answer my process so far?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great. So a lot of questions, a lot of just curiosity. You like to subvert things. Like once you figure out what it currently is, like how do you subvert it? How do you flip it around, which I love. So tell us how that process came to life to bring us the Delta dating wall.
Oh yeah. That's actually kind of a fun story. Okay. So interestingly, when we got that assignment, my partner and I, same partner as the OkCupid, our creative directors at the time, they were like, "Hey, look, like Delta bought this media and it's in Brooklyn. It's just like a painted wall." And one of the CDs actually said, like, "We're thinking like mediocre plus ideas here." And we're like, "Mediocre plus? Like, we can do better than that." Like, yeah. I don't think I was ready to settle for mediocre plus. I will say that the account person, like, she in her briefing, she just kind of as a thought starter, she said, like, FYI, people are taking a lot of pictures like in front of like painted walls these days, like wings and stuff. So she kind of like planted a little bit of that seed. But then around the same time as the DTF thing, so like I was on the dating apps and I observed that as I was swiping, like everyone is leading with their travel photos, and it was starting to be like really tiresome. I'm like, oh, another Machu Picchu picture, another Machu Picchu picture. So then when we looked into it, it was like, oh yeah, you know, people are really putting the travel photos first. And Delta had said, we want to let people know that we fly out of New York City and into like a lot of different places. So my partner, who's a really talented writer, he kind of came up with that headline to bring the idea to life of, or it said, world travelers are more likely to be swiped right until you take the trip. We'll help you fake the trip with these backdrops. And then we showed the destinations that they flew out of New York, and then wanted to make them like even more insightful. When we kind of like got into the craft phase. So I noticed like people were always holding puppies. So like on one of them, like in the details, we said like, if you have a puppy, now would be the time to hold it up, or, you know, no duck face. And so we just added a lot of details to it. But yeah, I would say like this idea made the client very scared. And it was definitely like out of their wheelhouse. And so we ended up like selling them like two ideas out in one, but we were like, but you have to do this one first kind of thing. It ended up really taking off and getting them a lot of press. And so then they were like, we want more of that, you know, but.
Were they worried about it? Because what was their reason that they were concerned about it?
Yeah, probably that it felt like risque for some reason to them. Like they've just never really talked about dating. So maybe it was like an edge for them, even though it's like pretty safe territory.
Yeah, I could see maybe also just like, hey, we're an airline. Why are we talking about dating? It's like, that's not really our space.
Yeah.
But it's actually genius to do that because you're tapping into things that people really care about, that people have like an emotion about, which is not only travel, but dating, relationships. So it's super smart.
Thank you.
Tap in.
Yeah. And then the account person kind of giving us that little, oh, people are taking photos. Like, I wonder if she hadn't said that, if we would have gotten there. I'm not sure. You know, that was pretty.
Good idea can come from anyone.
Yeah.
Very cool. Who were the CDs on Delta at that time? Is it Jacqueline?
Sean and John were the CDs. Sean and John. Yeah.
White and Kennedy, New York has just done such a good job with Delta. I think like the films are all incredible. It helps to have, what's her name? The best voiceover in the
world. Oh my God. Viola Davis. Man, I can't even tell you how many times we were like, we would watch this edit and we would just have like a scratch VO on it. And we're like, oh, the edit isn't very good. But then we literally put her voice on it and we were just like, oh, thank God. Like it just needed her voice.
It's true. Like she absolutely makes that campaign. It's so, she just has the coolest, like best, most powerful voice, I think, of anybody.
Absolutely.
When we're born, we're more alike than we are different. start to believe the more distant we are from each other, the more different we must be from each other. And it's only when we venture out into the world that we realize all the things we share. Maybe that's the power of flight. Delta isn't flying to over 300 places just to bring us together, but to show we were never that far apart in the first place.
They're beautifully shot and they're just great. It definitely makes me have positive feelings about that brand.
Oh yeah. And they are the things that you want to work on. I was able to fly to Tokyo for a Delta shoot. So that was nice. Probably a career highlight. Yeah. First class and everything.
So how did you end up at Billy, the upstart Billy, started by our dear friend, Georgie?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So it was funny because I remember when she went to start this brand and she left Wyden, and I said, oh my God, I was like, why would anyone ever leave Wyden? You know, like I was like, I'm going to die here. And so I was like, okay. And she's going to start a razor brand. What? But then I saw her do, she talked to me about the strategy before they put out Project Body Hair. And I was like, man, yeah, you're definitely onto something with the positioning. And then they put out Project Body Hair and it was like this, it made front page news. I remember I was in Europe and I saw it on like the headline of the BBC and I said, oh my God, what? And so that definitely piqued my interest. And so by the time she reached out to me, she said, look, like we have a really cool identity. We have like an amazing look and feel, but we need to show like what we stand for on the inside. And like, I think you're the person to do that. So she just like, she also knew how to talk to me. I was like, that sounds pretty good. Cause I've always liked more like mission oriented work. And so that's how I ended up. Yeah. Going to a startup.
Good move.
It was. Yeah. In hindsight, it was really good. It helped me like flex a different part of my brain, and yeah, it was much more scrappy. There was some fun that was to be had, especially early on. Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's look at a couple of those spots.
Now, think of the perfect woman. She's slowly coming towards you. 3, 2, 1. Open your eyes. Did the woman you envision have long, flowing hair? Was she super feminine? Did she have children? Was she in her prime?
Oh, honey, I'm just getting started.
What about her?
Don't assume my pronouns.
Were they fit? For office? Did you think of me? Did you think of me? Me? Did you think of me?
Me.
Did you think of you?
Let's think about what we think about when we think of a woman.
You know, I had the pleasure of working with Georgie on Old Spice in Portland. She's incredible. What was that like to work with her, you know, as this pretty young female founder of this upstart brand? And obviously she, as the founder, was willing to take some big swings, and it ultimately paid off big time for her. But what was that like? What was she like as a founder / boss?
Yeah, honestly, I only have positive things to say about Georgie. I will say, like, from the beginning, she was really clear on like the tone for the brand, which really, really helped. She was like, if we were a music video, we would be like the MIA bad girls. And so just like from the beginning, I was like, okay, I got it, you know? And so like that really helped. And then it was very nice to, because we were only, I think I want to say I was like the 11th employee or something like that. And like the space that we were in, it was like, she sat right behind me and stuff. So it just didn't feel other, like other, you know, when you're at an agency and you're presenting up the food chain and then you're presenting up the food chain to the clients. It was like, I really just had like this direct line to someone. And so a lot of that red tape was gone. And that just helped us to just make more stuff like quickly. She was always clear on that, like, I want to like empower women and I don't want them to feel like helpless to how shitty it is for women. So tall order, what do you got kind of thing.
Yeah, she had a clear vision and she was willing to go for it.
Definitely. And she was receptive to like PR worthy ideas.
Yeah, I think people sometimes think like, oh, you got to be crazy to do, you know, great work. And they even refer to, I think it's a big mistake that creatives make when they present, whenever they use words like daring or even sometimes bold is scary to clients. Mm-hmm. And the clients that I've been involved with that have done the best work, and I was not at Billy, but I know Georgie, they're not crazy. They're smart. They're, they're super smart. They're brave. But I think brave almost does it a disservice even. I think they're just smart and they know, hey, this is a smart business decision for us to do something that gets noticed and talked about and amplifies our media spend by 10x because, you know, we're just going to get talked about and people are actually going to care. And even if some people don't like what we're doing, we're still going to get talked about and it's going to be good for us. So they're just, it's just smart.
I totally agree. And I actually would say that was like a little bit of our edge, was that the folks inside did have like this advertising background, because compared to other startups, like a lot of those CEOs, they didn't know that you could do something for Old Spice and like it skyrocket your business, whereas she did. Yeah. And so she, you know, just knowing that, she was willing to do a lot more, whereas oftentimes like a CEO has no idea, or they're just like, let's just do something kind of brandy and graphic design, and it's not really like a PR swing. Yeah. So
is there anything else that we want to do to stroke Georgie's ego on this podcast? Should we talk more about how wonderful and smart she is?
We could talk about how she's Australian, and that also kind of helps cut the edge in a room.
Yeah, for sure. The accent doesn't hurt. We have covered some ground. I hope that people are inspired, delighted, intrigued, transfixed by your vision. Creativity. I'd love to ask you some questions about creative direction. And these can be your philosophies or your practices as a creative director, or just like what you've experienced working under creative directors. Like, first of all, what type of environment, like what do you think a creative director can do to kind of create the environment for creatives to do their best work?
Yeah. I like that question a lot, actually. I think some of my favorite creative directors have brought a lot of like youthful vitality and like a whimsiness. I'll never forget, there was one who was like, oh my God, I could brainstorm with you guys at 4 a.m. if you guys want to. Like, that was like early days when I was like a junior. I'm like, what? Or yeah, I just think there's like effervescence and an excitement that they were exuding. And that was kind of like one flavor that really stood out to me in a positive way. And then like another flavor was almost like on the other side of that, where it was just like this chill, like very sharp, like succinct, like gives feedback, clear feedback on the spot in the room. So it was like, I like both of those flavors actually.
Yeah. So one is like a playful kind of making the process playful and fun.
Yeah. Very childlike. Or even being like, I remember there was one who was like, do you want to write the funny together? And I was like, yeah, let's write the funny together. You know, like that seems great. You know, it's just more collaborative.
Yeah. And then Clear Direction, which is as ECD, you know, I would get a lot of feedback from creatives on creative directors.
Right.
And I would say the number one criticism that creatives have of creative directors is a lack of clear or sufficient feedback. Like, I think that's what creatives want. There's a lot more that they would love, but the bare minimum that they seem to really want is just clear feedback and enough feedback, not just like, keep going.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're a CD, ACD, or senior creative ready to make the jump to CD, and you want to see exactly how I lead my teams to the kind of work we've been talking about in this episode and how I get clients to buy it, I made a free masterclass called The 7 CD Secrets. So if you want to get off the agency treadmill and onto a rocket with questionable safety protocols, hit the link in the show notes to watch my free 7 CD Secrets masterclass.
So this is maybe kind of the same question, and if it is, your answer can be the same. But what do you think makes for a great creative review for creatives?
Mm-hmm.
Not only like effective, but just like a good experience for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this one creative director said to me once, he was like, it is creative direction, not creative selection. And I just absolutely love that, because I've had experiences with people where they're like, no, 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 no. And they just are kind of like picking favorites, or worse, they're like, I don't mind that. I don't mind that. So I'm doing accent. I don't hate that. It's just like, that's not the vibe, you know? I think a lot of times too, what's helpful is identifying the ones that you like, and then you don't necessarily need to remark on the ones that you don't like, unless it's helpful for helping them understand like the tone in the future. But it just kind of like, okay, yeah, let's just focus on these ones that rose to the top kind of thing. And then I think it's also like helpful of like flipping at the end of, you know, flipping the conversation to like, hey, is there something that I missed that you think I overlooked? And giving references, pointing to different things, I think, to like add energy and clarity to an idea. Yeah.
I love that. Tell me again, it's not creative selection, it's creative direction.
Yeah.
That I have a way less elegant way of saying that. Like, as a creative director, you're not just a creative picker. Mm-hmm. You're not a picker of ideas. Like, that's part of your job, but that's like really a small part of your job.
Yeah, I like that.
Yours is better, or the person that said that is better. Is there any like specific feedback? Because it's one of the things I feel like creative directors don't get a lot of training. They typically don't get any training at all on, like, it's not surprising that the number one piece of criticism from creatives about creative directors is a lack of feedback or unclear feedback or bad feedback, because creative directors don't receive any training on that. They don't receive any. It's like, whatever they saw from the creative directors they had is the only training that they have on feedback. Is there any phrases or things that creative directors have said to you that you're like, oh, that was great, that was really helpful feedback, or just things they did?
Yeah, I'm like digging deep here, but there's actually like a few things that come to mind. So I would say when I was coming up in it, I remember I had a side idea. I was really big on side ideas for some reason, just because I always wanted to have something made. So I'd constantly pitch side things. And one of our clients had a relationship with Lady Gaga's like agent. So I was like, oh, I've got this side idea, I'd love to like pitch it to him. It's like for kind of like an interactive music video or whatever. So he's like, great, I'll set up the call. So generous. Call gets set up and I'm just like pitching it to him on the phone. And afterwards he was like, Jess, like, where is the deck? And I was like, the deck? And he's like, you have to have a deck. Like, you have to. I don't know why it didn't like always occur to me at the time. And like, obviously I went through the school of Wyden of like, it's the deck, you know? But he was like, yes, you need a deck. You need to like take them through like page by page, like get them nodding their head, like bring them on a journey. And I was like, ever since then, I was like, of course, like that makes perfect sense. I don't know why I thought I could just like, because I've always been kind of like good at presenting, I would say, or like just, you know, riffing a bit. So I was relying on that. But I thought that was obviously that really stuck with me. And he was so right. I mean,
yeah.
So true. Another thing that comes to mind was, I think just as an art director and not really dabbling as much with copy, I just remember like asking Susan Hoffman, because she kind of came from an art direction background too. I'm like, how do you know if, like when you're becoming a creative director, like how do you know when you see copy, like if it's good kind of thing? And she was just like, you just know when it's good. You know when it's not good. And it was like as simple as that. And it just helped me because I think I was just in my own head about it of like, oh, I come from art direction. So like, surely I couldn't judge good copy. And it's like, no, that's not true. You know, I do know when something's working and when something shines. One other thing that comes to mind was, it was a little bit more about just like throwing myself in the ring for a position. So like a CD position that was open. And I think I thought that they would like approach me for it kind of thing, or like they would approach like eligible candidates. I didn't realize it was like, oh, I had to really like raise my hand for it. And Laddie had shared that she was like, you know, women, they only like raise their hand when they feel 100% qualified, and men raise their hand when they feel like 70. It's from a book. I can't think of
that. Yeah.
And so she was like, if you want this, Jess, you have to name that you want it, and like really like encouraged me. And I was like, oh my God, she's so right. Like, what was I thinking? So that was obviously really helpful advice also.
Yeah. No, that's, I often give that advice to women and just say like, look, there's going to be men that are less qualified than you, or at least no more qualified than you, that are going to, they're going to throw their hat in the ring. And that they're going to get the job because you didn't. And here's the other secret. Almost no one is qualified. So it's like, you just have to, if you're waiting to feel 100% qualified and prepared for a position, you're going to wait forever because you're never going to feel that way.
Absolutely. And,
you know, just go for it if you want it. And if you don't want it, then don't do it. Don't feel like you have to try to take a position that you're not interested in. But yeah, go for it. Oh yeah. What, like, how do you prepare for presenting and selling to clients? Like, aside from all the strategy and everything, obviously that's a huge part of whether a client buys something is like, How much strategy have you gone through, and how have you set up the deck to kind of set up the idea? But what do you practice? Do you kind of rehearse your part of a presentation? What do you do?
I love this question. So I took I was like a business major or whatever, and they made you take a course in giving presentations. And one thing that I learned there was that if you practice while you stand on a bed, it like emulates like the adrenaline and like the nerves and stuff. And so honestly, like I don't need to do it as much, but I always practice my presentation like multiple times. And like if I'm feeling nervous about something, I will do it on the bed just to like get the nerves out. And then I'll kind of make like little notes on my computer and reference them as I'm reading them. But I always practice the presentation, especially if there's another person presenting with me. Like, do you want this slide? Do you want that slide? And then I bring like big energy, like when I'm presenting, like I will be like, and like, I just really sell it.
So why does standing on the bed, what is that doing?
I guess it triggers something in your nervous system, kind of like that fight or flight response. Wow. Yeah,
this is a great technique. I'm going to try. I always talk about there's that TED talk that this female researcher and scientist did about how you can hack your brain to by physically, like if you put a pen in your mouth and shove it to the back, basically, your brain thinks you're smiling. You don't even have to. You don't have to really smile. You just have to put your mouth in that position, and then put your hands over your head for 3 minutes. And they brought in a bunch of people, and they did their blood work and all their measurements and their hormones and everything before. And then they had them do things like put the pencil in their mouth and raise your hand for 3 minutes. And then they did all the hormones and the blood work again. Biologically, they have the same measurements as somebody who just like won a sports game or had some sort of actual victory where they're.
What?
And so you basically reverse engineer those chemicals in your brain.
Yeah.
And so.
I love that.
I do that all the time. And I used, like, it used to be something that Baldwin, my partner at Wyden, like we would do that, especially if we were like low energy or we were grumpy. Maybe we just got out of like a series of kind of bummer meetings or just boring meetings or whatever. And we had to like go into something that was where we needed to bring some energy.
Yeah.
I would literally be like, all right, Baldwin, let's go to the men's bathroom. And we'd like bring our pens and we'd be, so that the ECDs of the office would be in the men's bathroom. Kind of like,
oh my God. And did you notice, did you feel a difference in your body?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Wow. You totally notice a difference. I do it with my kids sometimes. Like if they're really grumpy, I'll be like, all right, everybody stick the pen in your mouth. And it's also just kind of funny. Like you can't help but kind of laugh at how ridiculous it is. But like the Superman pose apparently does the same thing. If you put your hands on your hips and stick your chest out, that apparently has the same like emotional chemical reaction. But
yeah.
But I had not heard the bed, the standing on the bed. That's a good one.
It's a new one for your arsenal.
Yeah, tell me about what these are.
So, in 2008, my dream job was to work at Droga 5, as was my partner at the time. And it was, there was a recession happening. And so there was all sorts of layoffs. And so, I think the trend at the time was to kind of like send things in the mail to get noticed. I'm not sure if that's true anymore because they can be done pretty poorly. And I don't even know if what we did was super successful all the time. But so the first thing that we did was we sent bird parts in the mail. This is different. I'm going to tell you the whole story. And we with a letter, and we had a picture of a falcon, and we were like, meet Kiki, like for every day you don't hire us, like Kiki's going to get it. And we had found this like taxidermy, like turkey or something on eBay. And like the person said that they could like cut it up in pieces for us. We're like, great. And then the next time we sent like this card and we recorded bird sounds. We're like, baka, baka. And we're like, Kiki said you would know what this would mean. And then the third time we actually sent like the bird parts. So they were like, all right, like you got our attention. That was like a little bit weird, but like, sure, come in. And then we showed our books. But that wasn't like totally enough. And so we were like still kind of like pining to work there. And then we sent handwritten like infographics in the mail. My partner's name was Zach. And the person that we were sending it to at the time was Ted Royer. And so it was like this whole infographic of like reasons you should hire Zach and Justin was handwritten. And so like, I've got these three examples here. So one of them says, hiring Jess and Zach will help your sperm count. And then on the x-axis, it's a number of cigarettes Zach will likely bum from you, like your sperm count, positive correlation. How hiring Jess and Zach will affect the additional $320 million budget generated by new accounts. They just won Puma and Method. And obviously you can see like we don't cost anything. Or one of our favorite ones, as we said, his name was Ted. How hiring Jess and Zach will help capture the voice of the growing Hispanic market. So it's at us, Ted, Usted, just so stupid. It doesn't make any sense. And then that year they had done the Great Schlep, So they had the Jewish Federation for Council as a client, kind of. And so we said how hiring Jess and Zach will make the Jewish Federation for Council and Education even happier with you. And so Zach was half Jewish, I'm half Jewish, but together we equal one full Jew. And so then that piqued their interest some more. And then we ended up coming in, we showed our book to someone else, and they were super not impressed with our books. But there was like one thing that, like, it was like the back of my book that they were like, okay, that, like that, if you can do that. So they gave us like a trial period. And then David Droga was like, you did some, I can't do an Australian accent, but he was like, you did some dumb things to get in here and you did some smart things to get in here, but above all, you were persistent. So that's how we got the job.
That's funny. I think I might hire you just off this last slide of half, one half, one half Jew equals one full Jew. That's pretty funny. Well, thank you, Jessica. This has been great. Thank you for sharing so much of your process and your work. You've done so much awesome work. Like I said, too much good work. It's overwhelming. It's too much to go through. And I think you should abbreviate and be less successful in the future.
You're very generous. Thank you for your kind words. It was great to talk to you.
And I will send you, as payment, I will send you the 62 questions.
All right. Thank you. Deal. I'm going to follow up with you on that if it doesn't come through.
Please do. It probably is not going to come through because I'm going to forget. So yes, follow up. But awesome. Thanks for having you. Thanks for me having you. Thanks me, you, and thank you is having.
You're welcome.
This time is
a million.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you want to go deeper on the exact system I use as a CD to consistently help my teams generate great work and get clients to approve it, you can check out my free masterclass, The 7 CD Secrets. Links in the show notes.